Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is Australian Advantage slot player, Peter Liston. We'll be talking to Peter in a few minutes. We received some mail over something I said last week. Last week, our guest was Ken Adams, and we were talking about new casinos being built in Japan. And I asked whether it would be easier for a wealthy Chinaman from Beijing to fly to Japan rather than Macau in order to gamble. It turns out that the term Chinaman is offensive to at least some people of Chinese descent. I had no idea. I was using the term spur of the moment as a neutral term, meaning a man from China, as I might say a German or Afghani or Brazilian had the conversation gone that way. I have no idea how many times I've used that term in the past, if ever. Since I now know that at least some people find it offensive, I'll try not to say it. I'm not attached to that word in the slightest. I meant no offense and apologize for using an offensive term. Richard, did you know it was an offensive term?
I did, but it went right by me when we did that show. I didn't even realize you had said it, so... You know, you've apologized, and that's good, and we won't do it again.
Peter, is Chinaman an offensive term in Australia?
Bob, I asked my lovely lady, who happens to be Chinese, and she said no. I think the term might be more offensive to possibly a feminist, because they can become offended when you use the term chairman rather than chairperson. But look, Chinaman is a term that we heard when we were kids. You don't hear it anymore. I think that's the only problem. It's a little bit old. But normally you would say Chinese rather than Chinaman.
Very good. So let's move on. The first appeal for Phil Ivey and his partner went mostly against him. They are now ordered to repay $10.1 million to the Borgata Casino in Atlantic City. This basically puts them back to where they were before the edge sorting went down. They did get to keep $250,000 in comps. We've said numerous times on this show we don't think they should have had to pay anything at all, but as of now, several judges see otherwise. Ivy's team says they will appeal further. Do you have any comments, Richard?
Not really. It just sickens me. It just sickens me. I think it's a horrible precedent, and I'm really kind of speechless over it.
Yep,
hopefully, he'll win on appeal.
The times they are a changing. Okay, we've spoken a few times about parking fees coming to Las Vegas. Now, Bonnie and I spent the weekend in New Orleans at the Harris Casino and nearby other casinos. There were signs saying it costs $35 a day or so, plus tax, to park there, which is supply and demand for that area, I guess. Here in Vegas, players are objecting to the onset of parking fees. But in reality, is that many jurisdictions, parking fees are quite a bit higher than the fees being talked about in Las Vegas. Nobody likes it when prices increase, of course, but eventually players in Las Vegas will learn to deal with it. Richard?
Yeah, I remember when I dealt at a casino called the Castaways that used to be where the Mirage is today. And one of the things that people would say often that they liked about the place was that they could park so close to the front door. Of course, now the whole corner where the TI sits today was vacant land at that time. So land on the Strip is at more of a premium. You know, I guess they're going to charge for it. I think it's a mistake that especially for locals, free parking for locals is going to end on Wednesday. There are so many good places to go eat. I'm less likely to go to one of those casinos where I have to pay for parking than I would be to now go somewhere else. So I think it's really a mistake for them to be charging locals for parking. Especially if you're, you know, if they could validate if you're going to go eat in the casino or see a show or something like that.
Well, possibly they will validate. All right. Changing topics. We spoke some time ago about two California poker players getting ripped off for $100,000 by police in Iowa on a civil forfeiture action. The police accused them of not using a turn signal, which, of course, they had. And eventually they got $90,000 of their $100,000 back, except the lawyers, taking a third, kept $30,000. So then the players decided to sue the casino or the state of Iowa for damages. They received $60,000 for damages this a few weeks ago, of which presumably the lawyers kept $20,000. And so the players were approximately made whole by all of this, although it was a couple years of hassle and aggravation, and they were out of business for a while. It is a happy ending, given that being made whole is happy. But Iowa apparently has decided to do away with these civil forfeiture seizures. I don't know how many other states are doing away with it, but Iowa has reached that decision. Apparently, they say not because of this case, but it's good to know that you can drive through Iowa safely these days. Do you have any comment, Richard?
No, I mean, I'm happy they got their money back. I wish the punishment was bigger. You know, I think some of these jurisdictions need to be, you know, given lessons that will sting more than what this did. But, you know, I'm happy they got their money back.
Very good. So am I. Let's talk to our guest. Peter Liston discovered the profitability of progressive slot machines in the mid-1990s, living in Australia. Since then, he's played these slots all over the world, profiting more than $1 million in the process. Peter's book is called Million Dollar Slots. His last visit to our show was in February of 2013, and we'll be talking about different things today than we did back then. If this turns out to be of interest to you, check out the archives for the earlier podcast. Peter Liston, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Yeah, thank you very much, Bob and Richard. It's a pleasure and a privilege to be on your show, which I enjoy very much.
Thank you. Can slot machines be beaten?
Well, I guess your listeners are asking the question, who is this Peter Liston? A guy that claims he makes money on slot machines, and we know you can't make money on slot machines. So I think we need to address that issue first. So, Bob and Richard, you guys know that you can, but I guess our listeners may be a bit more skeptical. Now, when I look at my library, and I've got titles in my library, Winning at Slots, Beating the Slots, Powerful Profits from Slots. Now, those books, when you read them, they're all very similar. They tell you the history of the slots, how they work. There's a chapter on money management, a chapter on slot play strategy that might include advice like recognize the cycles when the machines are paying. And then in the last chapter, on the second last page, they would admit that you can't really win on the slots. And my book, Million Dollar Slots, lets you know that you can beat the slots. And most of my book is devoted to sharing how I learned how to do that. Now, the difference between my book and their books is they look at the slot machine, whereas I look above the slot machine at the linked progressive jackpots. Now, I've been playing slots for 22 years, and on my estimate, I've turned over $50 million in casinos all around my country and other countries as well. Now, I've got to tell you this. I have never found a machine I can beat, yet I, and now many others, have made a lot of money playing those same machines. When you look above the machines, you'll notice one of three things. Either there's no link jackpot, or there's a link jackpot, but it's fixed, or there's a link jackpot that is rising as you play it. This is a progressive jackpot, and this is where the money is to be made.
Okay. How much money can you make from progressive slots?
Well, Bob, that depends on where you live. The more slots you have in your area generally, the more money you can make. Now, in my state, Victoria, in Australia, we have 30,000 slots. Now, around 3% of them have beatable progressive jackpots. And that makes about 900 beatable slots in my state. Now, in my state, we have around 15 advantage players making a good income. Maybe not as our media moguls, Bob and Richard, but 900 beatable slots divided by 15 advantage players works out at about 60 beatable slots per advantage player will give you a decent income. Now, unlike blackjack, where you can sit down on a table and start making money, with advantage slot play, you have to monitor your 60 beatable slots. And those slots could be in a number of venues. So each of those slots may only be playable once every 2 months, for example. But that equates to a play per day if you have 60 slots. And each play on average will make you money. The advantage of slot play compared to blackjack is that your return on turnover will be somewhere around 10% if you're playing on a bank of machines so that you can wait for the optimal hit point, down to about 3% on a standalone machine where you might have to hit it earlier because you don't want somebody else to get it. This compares with around 1% EV on advantage blackjack play, although you, Richard, will have a better idea than I have because I don't play blackjack. I sat down on a step, I'd soon be kicked off.
Why do you say that, Peter? Because I would think 3% on a slot machine, you're going to get many more decisions per hour on a slot machine than you would on a blackjack table. So I would think 3% on the slot machine would be much, much better than 1%
absolutely
on blackjack.
Absolutely, because you are turning over. On your slot machine, you're turning out, you're pressing about 17 times a minute, whereas on a blackjack table, you've got one play a minute.
Right. So you're getting 1,000 spins an hour. So why do you say that correlates to 1% on blackjack? Is it because bet so much more at blackjack than you can on the slot?
I don't know. I mean, as a card counter, Richard, you can tell me what is your expected EV as a card counter.
Well, let's say it's 1%.
Yep. 1% is 1%, regardless of whether you're playing one hand an hour or one hand a minute. It's 1%.
Right. You were saying that the 3% on the slot equated to the 1% on blackjack.
Oh, no. Compared with. So you're getting a much higher EV on your slots than you are on your blackjack.
Okay. Now I understand what you mean.
Okay, yeah. Sorry if I said it. Yeah. So basically, with 30,000 slots in my state, we have 15 players who have made a good income. And they've got their second houses and they've got good cars. Now, in your state of Nevada, you've got six times as many slots as we've got. So I see that you've got potential there for advantage slot players.
But now, you mentioned 15 machines per player, but...
No, 60.
Or, I mean, 15 players, 60 machines per player, but aren't the same 15 players all going to show up at the one machine that's up to a positive play?
They may well do, but in my state, the advantage players have agreements, and they tend to keep out of each other's areas, so they
divide. Oh, so you literally assign the machines to specific players?
Yep. Oh, what? Not so much machine. We have areas, so... We actually keep, have little lines going all over the city, dotted lines all over the city. So you can't go here and you can't go there.
So four or five casinos belong to you, and four or five belong to somebody else.
Yeah, well, we only have one casino, but most of our slots are in the hotels and the clubs. So I might have 20 hotels and clubs, and the others might have 20 each. So basically, I might have 60. The guy might have 50 advantage slots, and somebody might have 80.
It's great that cooperation is working out.
It is good. It does work out well. It hasn't been easy, Richard. Believe you me.
I'm sure.
But let's say Richard and I decided we're going to move to Australia to play advantage slots. Don't hold your breath on this, but let's just assume.
Yep.
Now, you have this competitive equilibrium with your 15 slot players, and all of a sudden, two more show up, and we figured out how to do this, and we want our share. So what does that have to do? How does that work with the agreement between you and the 14 others?
Well, if you come to my area, I'm going to miss out. I'll do as much as I can to compete with you. I might play a bit earlier. Try and starve you out, I guess. But ultimately, if you guys come in and I can't survive, I've got to go elsewhere. I've got to go back to Las Vegas and play there.
All right. What types of places are the best to play advantage slots? Now, exact hotels in Victoria, Australia is relatively uninteresting to an American audience. But in general, what types of places are best?
Okay, Bob. Basically, and I go to America every now and again, every two or three years, and check out the places. What I look for, the first thing I look for is where there are lots of slots within a drivable distance. So when I look at United States and look at where the slots are in your states, I see bunches of slots in Nevada, Pennsylvania, Atlantic City, Oklahoma, and Connecticut, for example. Next, I pick my target. So I look around and I say, okay, look, I haven't been to Oklahoma before. 60,000 slots in Oklahoma. Now, there's not that many people there, so I have a bit of a further look and realize that there's no slots in Texas, so I can understand why they've got 60,000. And it's away from sharps like you, Richard. So, okay, I book my flight and I head over to Oklahoma. So next, I want to visit the casinos in my target area. Now, remember, if there are more than 60 beatable jackpots, I might be in business. If there's mild competition, I might need 100. If there's bad competition, well, I've got to look elsewhere. Now, 6 months ago, I flew into Oklahoma to have a look. 60,000 slots in your state, twice as many as in mine, and as far away from Bob and Richard. Now, Windstar Casino, 7,400 slots in the one casino. Choctaw Durant, 4,500. Very interesting. So I booked into Windstar for 4 days, and yes, Richard, I noticed your resort fees. That was my first experience with them. Now, Windstar Casino is the biggest casino in North America, and it's also got the largest arses that I've ever seen in the world. So I had 4 days in – I booked in for 4 days in Windstar. Now, when you're checking out the Advantage slots and waiting for them to rise, you have a lot of time on your hands. So there's not a lot to do in Windstar, I must admit. The only attraction for me was to go to the pool bar, chat to the guy at the bar, drink your beers, and watch the water level rise and fall as these people got into and out of the pool. Okay, so I've decided that there's a lot of slots at Windstar, a lot of slots at Durant. Next step is, how many beatable jackpots are there here? So I go around all the slots in Windstar and count the ones with progressive jackpots that are the particular types that I like. There are 200 beatable jackpots in Windstar alone, three times as much as I've got in my area. Good. I drive across to Choctaw, Durant, 60. Not so good. But those two together, 260 beatable slots within a one-hour drive. That's potentially very good. Now, I did intend to check out the rest of the casinos in Oklahoma. I wanted to go to Pennsylvania. I haven't been there before. I wanted to revisit Atlantic City and Vegas, where I had been 3 years ago. But I had a near-death experience in my rental car. You guys probably don't realise this, but you happen to drive on the wrong side of the road. And I happened to forget that. I happened to forget that for 1 second. So that was a very frightening experience, and I thought, no. I made a management decision to curtail my search. And one of the guys at the bar at Windstar suggested I go down to Miami, where he said the scenery was very good. So while I was down there, I checked out the Mikasaki Casino in Miami. Now, surprisingly enough, no a thousand slots there and no Advantage machines at all. So what about other places that might have promise? Now, 3 years ago, I was in Atlantic City, and it looked promising. There was about 300 beatable jackpots in the casinos there, and they're all within a bus ride of each other, and quite a few of the large $9,000 jackpots as well. Foxwoods and Mohegan Sun in Connecticut, 10,000 slots in close proximity. And again, quite a few high jackpots when I was there. I do have a student in North America who is making more money than I am, although it took him a while to build up. I won't say which city he's in, to be fair to him. I'll also say that if it's a small city, I won't teach two people if they intend to play in the same city.
So when I played progressive slots back, 25 or more years ago, the slot machines were mechanical. So you could count the stops on the reel and know that if there were 20 stops on the reel and there was one jackpot symbol, and you could calculate the jackpot pretty easily. But then when they brought in the computer chips, just because there are 20 stops on the reel doesn't mean that each stop is one chance in 20. They can adjust that to whatever number they want. So how are you able to account for that?
Okay, if it's a straight progressive, I call that a straight progressive jackpot, where you've got to get the red, white and blue sevens or whatever, the way I would do that one is to observe someone play over, say, a two-hour period and count the number of times the winning symbol gets onto each line. And then if you find it's 1 in 200 on the first line and 1 in 300 in the second and 1 in 500 in the third, multiply that through. That gives you the approximate odds. Work out how much that would be in turnover. Deduct the small returns that you get back. You come up with expected cost of getting the jackpot. Then you see what the jackpot's worth. If the jackpot's higher than the expected cost, you go for it. I will share with you that in my early days, I did what you did, and I did map the reels. I didn't know about the virtual reels. There was a big jackpot, 150,000. I calculated 22 to the power of 5, started playing it, got it. Cost me about 16,000, which was good. Then I learned about the virtual reels. Did the process of what I'm talking about, actually count how often they come up once in every 25 times. So my $150,000 jackpot probably should have cost $140,000, but that was pure luck.
When you come to Oklahoma and there's all these slot machines, are you coming by yourself or are you bringing a partner with you?
I travel alone, Bob. It's a lot easier when I travel alone. I have enough arguments arguing with myself, let alone somebody else. But look, when you're researching, you don't need two people. If you've got two people, you've got double expenses. And I enjoy being on my own. When I'm on my own, I tend to meet more people, so it's more interesting. You don't need two people when you're researching. If it got to the point where I found a big jackpot, I might have to make some very quick friends.
Yeah, but some of these progressive jackpots might be an expected 10 hours before it's hit, or 20 hours, or 30 hours. How do you deal with that when you're by yourself?
If you're traveling around, basically what I'm doing, Bob, is researching. I'm looking for somewhere where I can move my digs and move into. So I don't really travel with the intent of playing while I'm traveling. But if something like that did come up, then I'd have to face that when it came to. You know, another big problem when I travel around is money. If there is a big jackpot, how do I get $40,000-$50,000 out of your banks. That is a problem.
It certainly is. You mentioned to me on the phone earlier this week that there was a play in your local place where the casinos closed for a certain number of hours at night, and there was a guy on a particular machine. How do you deal with that?
Okay, that was one of the local hotels, and if you play a large jackpot, and our hotels are required by law to close for 4 hours, which means that the most they're open for is 20 hours. Now, we have a maximum bid of $5. So if it's a $9,500 jackpot, you've got to make sure that you can knock that off within 20 hours. If you leave it hanging and then you turn up the next morning and somebody else is there before you, you can lose a lot of money. And that actually happened to somebody in a hotel near me. I got a telephone call in the morning saying this $1,500 jackpot was on 1464. There was probably about $1,000 expected value in that. There was a guy on the machine. He had been playing it before. I guess he got onto it in the morning. I went over there. What locals do, I mean, he probably intended to keep playing it, but what locals, they make mistakes. So what he did, he left his machine, went for a smoke. Now, when you've got an advantage player around, you don't do something like that. So just popped on the machine and got the jackpot. And then when he came back, he wasn't too happy. I just sort of slipped out the back of the back of the venue while he was arguing with the management, waiting for my check.
Wow.
So
had he done anything to indicate he was still on it, like left a cup on a chair or tilted the chair or left his slot club card in there or anything like that, so that a reasonable assumption was he was still there?
He did leave a reserve sign on the machine, but there are rules in the casino that you can only reserve a machine for 10 minutes, and after 10 minutes you can ask for that to be taken off.
Sounds like the police are coming to get you, Peter.
Yeah. Look, guys, it's not a nice way to make money. I would love to be doing something where I'm actually helping people, but, you know, I come back home, I made good money, I come back home and I felt terrible. It's not nice.
Yeah, I'm sure it can lead to some big arguments. I know it would here in the States.
Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say you've got to be good at slipping away from places. You don't hang around.
Yeah, but if you're a well-known player, there's no such thing as slipping away. You may get out today, but they know who you are. So.
I'm talking in terms of the player who felt that jackpot should have been his. But I've kept a low profile in this place, but I think they're starting to recognise that I'm only there when the jackpots are high, which is not good.
You've been doing this for 20, 22 years. How are things different in advantage slots today than they were in the mid-90s?
Not a lot different, Bob. Things have changed. I'll just go through them quickly. Prior to 1994, we were a slot-free state. And then our government and their wisdom decided we should have a casino. So in 1994, we had our first casino with 3,000 machines, and followed a few years later by 27,000 slots in the hotels and clubs. Now, back then, progressive jackpots were mainly linked to banks of machines. So any one of a number of players could win the jackpot. And these progressive jackpots were on slot machines, video keno, and video poker. Now, the first 2 years, I was the only advantage player in my casino, so I cleaned up. I was making some serious money, many more times than my full-time job then as a teacher, and almost as much as Bob and Richard make.
Oh, yeah.
Now, in 1997, my first year is competition. So there was competition for seats on those banks of machines linked to the progressives. So he got two players, I had two. He had three, I had three, and so forth. When the hotels gained the slots, I had a car running around Melbourne with a team of players. And I had no idea about my potential liabilities if they crashed, which they did. Now, because the progressives were on banks of machines back then, and you had so many people playing, the jackpots moved quickly. So I was a very busy boy. But now over the next 3 to 4 years, we had less video keno, less video poker, which is a pity because I enjoy playing video poker. So now it's basically just the slot machines. With more competition in the gaming venues, there's now more potential advantage players than available machines. So the advantage players started initiating rules. And the rules were like, first person in the venue had a choice of machine. Then people started to have real problems with their bowels because person A arrives at the gaming venue, believing he's got the first pick, and person B arrives and claims she was in the toilet. Now, over the last 4 to 5 years, like you, we've had more standalone progressives. So when our advantage players started joining teams to share rather than compete, which makes to me makes a lot of sense. The machines and jackpot links are pretty similar all around the world. You guys have similar owners in different countries, so that makes for similar slot selections. But one thing hasn't changed. The local players are still as ignorant as the first day slots were introduced. So if it was not for the mathematically changed Bob and Richard, none of us would be successful.
Yep, that's true.
Now, when we were talking about this before the show, you said something about when the slots started back then, they were giving away luxury automobiles. And out of the first 100 or so, you personally won 10 of them. So that I guess you have a pretty big garage. If that happened here, players would start to complain that one son of a bitch, Peter Liston, was hogging all of the cars and preventing them from winning, and it wasn't fair. And eventually the casino would let Peter Liston know, you're no longer welcome here. Did any of that happen to you?
Funny enough, in the first 3 years in the casino loved me. I mean, I had huge turnover. The money that goes into the progressive jackpots belongs to the players, so I'm not taking any money from the casino. In fact, I'm speeding the whole process up, so they used to comp me all over the place. With the cars, basically back then, only about one jackpot in 10 would get into my range. So 10% would get up to that level where I would play. So nine cars out of 10 would go to other players. And then on the 10th occasion, okay, I come in and take the 10th one. I didn't have problems with the regular players, but I didn't have problems actually until I had competition. And then my two players or three players were matched by his two players or three players. Then it was four players versus four, five versus five. Then our local paper, headlines on the front page of the local paper, which they usually reserve for the Third World War, pokey gangs in casino. Now keep in mind, we call our slots poker machines, so pokey gangs in casino, not a good heading. And so lo and behold, they come up to me and say, well, you're excluded. And I said, why? I haven't broken any rule. They said, well, as a private business, we can take away your implied license to come in here. So that was the argument they gave me. I know for certain that would not hold up in court now, but that was their argument. So after 6 months, they let me back in. They thought things had cooled down a bit. That's okay. Now, they then instituted a rule that if three people play together on slot machines that are linked to a progressive jackpot, they are engaging in syndicate play, which means that they can be excluded for 2 years. Now, they explained all that to us. That was fine. We accepted that. Then 5 years later, they changed the rule. If two people or more play together on a linked jackpot system, they are engaging in syndicate play, and they are liable for an exclusion for 2 years. Now, if you walk in a casino, if you see husbands and wives playing together, and most machines are linked to jackpot links, then obviously they're all breaking the rule. But these rules weren't designed for mum and dad. They're designed for Peter Liston. So anyway, I go in there, and I've got myself and an associate. We're playing for a jackpot. that's fine. And then a week later, I'm sitting down in the lounge in the casino, and that feeling that Richard has as a blackjack player, and I'd never had before in my life, three security guys behind me, and the manager coming up with an exclusion order. I've excluded this, I've breached this particular rule. Okay, this time I'm going to fight it. So I hired a barrister who was terrific. We went to the tribunal. My barrister said, yes, we admit the fact that we have breached Rule 18. We were operating as a syndicate. There were two of us. We accept that. Now, if you look at Rule 76, you'll notice that the rules must be displayed in a prominent place. Can you please tell us where these rules are displayed? I said, oh, yes, they're upstairs. And how many slots are upstairs? Oh, 150. How many downstairs? Oh, 2,850. Okay. Where exactly are the rules displayed? Well, when you walk in, they're behind the sign when you walk in. Okay. And these rules were actually on A4 bits of paper with reflective glass and dim lighting. So when it got to that point, it got to the point where were those rules prominently displayed? Obviously not. So I was able to get back into the casino. So, look, basically the casino does not like advantage players, and they do not have many good jackpots. The good jackpots are out in the clubs and hotels.
And have clubs and hotels tried to bar you from play?
Look, they have. When they used to have the Banksa machines, and the my opposition are mainly Chinese. I won't use the word Chinaman, but my opposition are mainly Chinese. And look, I love the Chinese, but their sense of discretion is not good. And when they come in and they occupy all of the machines, they all put $1,000 each in the machines. They wait for the jackpot to get to the optimal hit point. They bang away furiously and noisily. Then when the jackpot goes off, they wait till somebody goes around, counts how much they've got in credits left. Then they meet together in the venue, in the hotel or club, and sort out and share the profits or the losses. So in that situation, yeah, some of the hotels, yeah, but now that we've got more of these standalone machines, it's not such a problem. So that's not a problem now.
Richard, we might be one of the very few radio shows in this country who've had as a guest a pokey gang leader. We should be honored. Do you teach others how to play slots with an advantage?
Yeah, I do, Bob. I don't teach anybody in my hometown because that would be the amount of money I would lose on them taking my jackpots would be greater than what I earn teaching them. The good thing about teaching people in other states for me is in the early days they don't have a lot of bankroll. So when they have these large jackpots, the 9,500 jackpots, for example, they might have $4,000 worth of EV. Now, that comes with a plus or minus 10,000 variance, and they may be a little bit afraid to do that. So they'll call me up. Call me, I'll fly up there, $500 worth of expenses, $4,000 worth of EV. That's great for me. I actually prefer teaching people overseas. And the advantage for teaching people like places like the US, it's a two-way learning process for me. I give them as much help as I can in terms of when to play the jackpots and where. But I also learn from them about jackpot conditions in their city. Now, one of my students travels extensively like I do. So there's a valuable exchange of information from around the world. So it's a two-way process.
I remember when you were on the show 3 years ago, Richard expressed my opinion that the thought of playing slot machine for 2 or 4 or 6 hours ranks right up there with getting a root canal. It just must be awful. So do you ever read a book or anything like that to make it not so terrible?
Absolutely not. And the reason I wouldn't is I try to look as much as I possibly can like a regular player. If there's a jackpot that's nice and high, I don't walk into the venue and bolt straight for the jackpot. Walk in, buy a beer, develop a limp, maybe put a dollar or two in an adjoining machine, and then sidle my way up to the machine that I want to play. I try and look as interested as I possibly can, and that is very, very hard. To be quite honest, I think I prefer a root canal. And, basically what I do, I do these mental exercises, and your listeners might be surprised to learn. In fact, the only place in the world I've seen this is in my state in Victoria. We have an information button. You can press the button and you can see what the percentage return is on the machine. You can see what the odds are of getting the five major prizes, the odds of getting the five smallest prizes. So what I do to prevent myself from going stark raving mad is I do these, I calculate the percentage return that I'm getting. So if I know I'm supposed to get 11% return, sorry, if I know the loss rate is 11%, maybe in the first $1,000, it might be a 35% loss rate. After $2,000, it might be 27% loss rate, and so forth. So it's just a mind game that I have. And obviously, the longer you play, the closer you get to the expected loss rate. But it's nice to talk to Richard. It's nice to know somebody else has had the same experience, and it's probably the most unpleasant way to earn money that I can think of.
Well, I have to say, when I did it, you still had to feed coins into the machine and pull a handle. So your hands would get black, and yeah, it was really horrible.
Even playing video poker for hours and hours and hours gets pretty boring. And video poker is a lot more interesting than slots. You do have to keep your mind engaged. One of the things I do on video poker is either, depending on the machine, count the number of four of a kinds or count the number of scares, which would be chances to get a four of a kind or royal. And if it's a type of bonus poker game, I would count one for normal four of a kinds and two for either twos, threes, and fours, and threes for aces. So I'm counting away. This number has no bearing whatsoever on anything. I'm not making any decisions based on it. And if the number is 87 or 492 when I leave, well, I'm going to start from zero next time I start. But just keeping your mind on something, keeping focused, is you got to have a trick to do it.
Well, in slots, you can plug in your headphones and listen to Gambling with an Edge. Seems like a perfect use of your time.
And that's exactly what I do, Richard.
Is wearing headphones what a typical slot player would do?
No. It's a bit of a giveaway, but sometimes you have to trade a little bit of discretion for your sanity. And you guys are very sane.
Do you pay attention to what you to how well you're dressed, or how well you're groomed, or anything? Is that important?
Yeah, look, I try to wear. I look around at the other people, the regular players. I try to look like the regular players. So I dress a bit daggy. Certainly don't wear a suit or anything like that.
I don't know what that's a word I'm not familiar in. What is daggy?
Daggy. Daggy means right. Not smart.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a new one on me too.
So you try to look daggy. Okay,
daggy,
good.
Yeah. New word.
All right, so what else do you do other than looking daggy?
Look, that's all you got to do. Once you get in there, you try to look a little bit interested in what you're doing, because that's what regular players are. You just look at what the other players do and try and copy what they do. So the hardest thing, to be quite honest, when the jackpot goes off, I don't get excited. If it's a large jackpot like 9.5 and people come around, one of the hardest things for me to do is to look excited. I mean, I know it's going to go off, and all I want the thing to do is get off as fast as I possibly can and get out of there. So, and then a staff member comes around, oh, congratulations, da 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 da, and you got to look a bit, look a bit silly and what have you. But and that's surprisingly, it's not a great excitement for me.
Well, that's certainly true for me. I hit so many royal flushes through the years that one more royal flush is not a life-changing event at all. And yet, other people look at it, and they have so I need to pretend a little bit. It's Richard, on table games, do you need to pretend very much on good hands?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if you're playing a carnival game and you hit a 20,000 or whatever, yeah, you have to look like you care.
And then when somebody you've never met before says, "Wow, is this the biggest jackpot you've ever hit?" How do you answer that?
Usually I would say yes. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So, yes, very good. All right. So we're talking to Peter Liston. We're going to take a brief break now for some commercial messages. And then we're going to get back with a few more questions for Peter, including how to get in touch with him should you want to. The South Point Casino has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. Through this Saturday, you pay half price for virtually everything at the South Point using your points. Points do not need to be earned in December, just spent. This is a promotion that has run for many years during December, and many players accumulate points all year long so they can get the benefits at the end of the year. In 3 days, there will be double points on Christmas Day, midnight to midnight. All video poker machines count, no limits. Slot machine gets a much higher multiplier. The next semester of free video poker classes will begin Wednesday, January 25th, and go for 10 weeks. There will be two new classes this semester that have never been taught before, namely 9-7 double bonus quick quads and 8-6 bonus poker deluxe ultimate X. Neither of the games will be geared for beginners, which means basically if you're listening to this radio show, probably you could get value from the classes. The complete schedule may be found on bobdancer.com. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play a lot of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games, including many games where commercial video poker software does not cover them. The game of the week is 10-play Dream Card. Dream Card is a 10 coins per line game where periodically the fifth card you're dealt is a dream card, meaning it turns into the best possible card given the first four. You may change it if you like, but except for one case in bonus poker, it's actually the best card, or at least tied for the best card. The game adds a small amount to EV, considerable variance, and no strategy deviations are needed from basic play. All right, we're talking to Peter Liston. Peter, if somebody wanted to get in touch with you, how would they go about it?
Okay, there's a lot of information about my book and the courses that you can do on my website. My website is pokermachineschool.com.au. Now, remember, we call slots poker machines, so it's pokermachineschool.com.au. If you are interested in doing my course, I'll come out to you and visit you for 3 days in your city and go out. I'll teach you how to do it, and we'll go out and check out your casinos, check out the slots there as well. If you have any questions at all, please email me at slotsking@gmail.com. Now, that's slots with a Z, slotsking@gmail.com. The slot is with an O and not with a U, because my accent can be misinterpreted.
Yeah, if you go searching for Sluts King, you're going to find some very different information.
Probably even Sluts King.
and I'm sorry, the school, is it Pokey, P-O-K-E or P-O-K-E-R?
P-O-K-E-R.
Okay.
Poker Machine School.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Richard. How would people get in touch with us?
We welcome your questions. You can send them to us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge, or you can tweet them at me at RWM21. You can get the show delivered to you automatically every week by signing up at iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or gamblingwithanedge.com. To find an archive of all the old episodes, you can find that at bobdancer.com.
Thank you very much, Peter Liston. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Bob and Richard.
Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.